Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Get started on your painting project this summer and save big money at Menards. Rust-Oleum Stops Rust 5-in-1 Spray Paint lets you choose from 5 unique spray patterns with a twist of the dial, so you can get a professional, corrosion-resistant finish on every project. Save big money on Rust-Oleum Spray Paint now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Hey, pull up a chair. It's Hacks on Tap with David Axelrod and Mike Murphy.
I've spoken to everybody. Israel is doing very well, as you probably noticed. And I gave Iran 60 days, and they said no. And the 61st, you saw what happened. Day 61. So I'm in constant touch. And as I've been saying, I think a deal will be signed, or something will happen, but a deal will be signed. And I think Iran is foolish not to sign one.
Mike Murphy, we got a hell of a story brewing over there in the Middle East. And it's it may not be what most Americans are waking up thinking about every morning, but it's pretty impactful and pretty interesting.
Big. I mean, it's one of those tough call situations. Nobody wants the Iranian regime to have nukes. But, you know, Bibi, due to his own political problems, is kind of a hair trigger. So here we are. It's been sort of successful now because the Iranians are sending signals they want to negotiate. So it's a good time for ceasefire and to move in that direction. Worst case, we have the capability to go after Natanz, but it's very radiation risky, so tough one.
I didn't mean to put in a quarter and get the whole three plays.
Oh, I'm only
here.
Getting started.
No, but we have the thing. With, since we are Hacks on Tap, the thing that's interesting is how does this impact on the politics of our country, and how does it impact on Donald J. Trump? And we have the perfect guest today, the perfect guest hack, someone
completely
who's lived inside that between the ears and under that thatched
orange
she's
head. Literally calling us from behind the right eyebrow right now, deep inside the head.
Okay.
Yeah. Maggie Haberman of the New York Times.
Hello, Maggie.
Hi, guys.
Author of Con Man and...
author of Confidence Man.
Confidence Man, yes. So for purposes of time, I shrunk down the title of the book. So, sorry about that. So, Maggie... it seems like, am I wrong about this, but it seems like Bibi Netanyahu has maneuvered Donald Trump here into a very fateful, potentially a very fateful decision.
I think there's a lot we still don't know. And again, thanks for having me to both of you.
Always.
Thanks for referencing the Confidence Man paperback, which just came out.
Available on Amazon.com.
I think that... I'm trying to think how to say this. There's a lot we don't know. I think there's a lot that we're going to learn in the coming days. I do think that it is clear that, and my colleagues and I reported on this a couple of weeks ago, Trump has waved at twice, actually, in May. Trump, that we reported on this, Trump waved off Netanyahu from moving ahead on one attack, at least one that we know of, that Netanyahu was interested in. And then we know that there were other efforts in the month of May by Netanyahu. What is clear is that Netanyahu has been on a steady push to attack what he believes is a weakened Iran. And that puts Donald Trump in something of a quagmire, because Donald Trump has said over and over again, as the White House has noted on Tuesday morning several times, and I think in some kind of a news release on the White House website, he has said over and over, Iran can never have a nuclear weapon. That's not a particularly controversial position in the U.S., but it is something that he has said.
He's also said he wants a negotiated settlement, and he wants to negotiate it, having dissolved the last nuclear agreement with Iran. He wants to now have another nuclear agreement with Iran.
And the expectation for a lot of people, both among Republicans, frankly, and concerns among, you know, more hawkish Republicans heading into the second Trump administration, and uncertainty about what it would mean for more dovish Republicans and for some Democrats heading into a second Trump administration, was Trump is a deals guy, and that Trump would want to pursue a deal with Iran. And there was a lot of concern that he would take something that would look pretty similar to the JCPOA.
Mm-hmm. That was the treaty that the agreement that Obama
negotiated, mm-hmm. and that Trump withdrew, you know, ripped up in his first term. And that Republicans, particularly hawkish Republicans, have denounced for a long time. And, you know, there's been all sorts of questions about what that might look like. You know, Trump has sent over his friend and envoy, Steve Witkoff,
yes,
to negotiate with the Iranians, you know, as mediated by the Omanis for several weeks now. And there's, you know, clearly it did not work out the way that Trump was hoping it would, because Iran rejected the terms.
But Maggie, and then I want to ask Murphy something. It felt, there was supposed to be a meeting on Sunday that was going to be a very uh-huh. fateful meeting.
This past Sunday.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And Bibi acted before this. And that changed the whole equation. And it does, you know, it does suggest, and I think it's been reported in places, that Bibi didn't have a hell of a lot of confidence. He doesn't want a negotiated settlement. He wants to destroy the nuclear facilities. And maybe I will shift it over to Murphy. Murphy, this is where your point comes in. We're the only people who have the equipment necessary to destroy these nuclear facilities that are deep inside mountains and heavily fortressed.
Hey, you know, the Iranians are well aware of the Israeli Air Force. So they think, well, what do they not have? Big, heavy bombers and these bunker buster munitions. Now, the Israelis do kind of whisper about, well, we could always land 100 commandos there and, you know, do the guns of Navarone strategy, but super risky. And nobody knows, by the way, if you blow up the facility, what kind of radiation leak you get. But nonetheless, I mean, where it is now are the Iranians are in a very weak position. Their ability to hammer back at Israel is smaller than Israel's ability to hurt them. The Israelis have air superiority and a much more powerful air force. Their sideline people, like the Ukrainians, are, well, while you're over there, why don't you wipe out the drone factory that's been supplying, you know, the Russians? So there's,
Trump spoke to Putin on Saturday. Maybe he asked him not to do that.
Oh, I'm sure Trump gave him his, you know, Swiss account, and things are underway. But fundamentally, right now, the Israelis are scoring some wins that team worried about nukes doesn't like. Because while they can't wipe out the facility, they can sure slow it down. And the Iranians are already squawking a little about negotiation. So it's kind of worked. The problem with Bibi is, will Bibi take a partial win, which is all he's going to get, and let it pivot, because we can always go after that nuclear plant if we really want to.
But isn't it clear, Maggie, that's what Bibi wants? He's always wanted it. I can tell you back 15 years ago, you know, the discussions were all about, you know, if you attacked Iran, would the U.S. supply these bunker busting bombs, which, by the way, is different than the Big Beautiful Bill for people who are students of alliteration. But
I think you're raising the $64 million issue, Axe, which is, what exactly has changed here, right? Because this is something, a line that Netanyahu has pressed as the danger zone for some time. He has been trying to impress upon the U.S. the need to be involved. First, his own you know, we must go ahead because, you know, Iran is on the cusp and has wanted support from the U.S. And there are obviously different versions of what support could look like. It's, you know, there, and that is something that this administration and the Biden administration and the Obama administration have all talked about. But I do think that we are in a post-October 7th, 2023 world where I think that Netanyahu is looking at things differently. I think that he believes his legacy is going to be built in part on taking out various regional threats to Israel. You also saw, and I don't think this can be overlooked, a pretty significant threat on the existence of the Netanyahu government.
Yeah, man, he's gonna the parliament may be dissolved, the Knesset shortly, and he's looking at an election, and it better to be going to that election as the conqueror of Iran, of you know, this Iranian nuclear threat, and the guy who disarmed Iran, than as a, you know, corrupt prime minister who presided over October 7th and who still hasn't completely finished what he started out to do there.
Right. And he's been, and again, I don't, that's not, I just want to be clear, this is not happening. You know, this is not in the last 2 weeks where this is suddenly happening. This is, you know, this has been Netanyahu's push for a while.
And for all the BB issues, if you're an Israeli prime minister, you have your eye on that Iranian nuclear program.
Yeah.
And they have been pushing forward. They're the kind of bad dog. The minute you look away, they inch closer to the table full of
food.
Well,
they certainly did after after the international inspectors were ejected after he ripped up the last nuclear agreement. But the question here, because we are Hacks on Tap U.S., is for Trump, because one of the things that's changed since 15 years ago, Maggie, is that there is a real inward feeling in the country. And, you know, I've seen polls in the last 24 hours where like 70% of people say negotiate, don't attack. Because if you send your B-52 bombers in to destroy this, you're in the war in a really overt way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what, despite your, you know, living behind the eyebrow reference, it's hard to know whether President Trump.
That's a scary thing, by the way, but go ahead.
Thanks. Yeah, it's hard to know whether President Trump is, well, first of all, Trump doesn't tend to look in terms of long term projections.
Yes. He's a checkers player.
He's more about immediate engagement and reactions and responses. To your point, if the U.S. does get involved in some way, it, frankly, even if the U.S. is, you know, engaged in helping to refuel planes, that's still involvement. But if the U.S. gets involved in a deeper way, this isn't going to be a short-term engagement, most likely. You know, there isn't an easy scenario where a move is made and that's that, and then the U.S. gets to move on. And then we also haven't discussed that even with Iran weakened, what, you know, Iran going after, potentially going after a series of other targets that are not
American targets.
Could look like, you know, both in terms of military action, in terms of cyber actions. You know, the Iranians hacked the Trump campaign and attempted to hack the Biden campaign in 2024. So how much Trump is weighing the long term effects here, I think we'll know more in the coming days. But that is a huge question. I think it is becoming clear to a lot of his allies that what is happening right now and the decisions that he has to make may well define this second term. And that is not what his deepest base wants. There was a really interesting quote that he gave to, of all places, The Atlantic the weekend, which is
Was it on Signal or was this?
It was a publication. You really, there's nobody as fast as you.
Murphy is.
You keep that up. Actually, maybe Murphy, but
yes.
fair. I'll divide it both here. But a publication that he has trashed repeatedly, but also can't quit.
Yes,
can't quit. So,
Brokeback Mountain.
One of his themes. Stop. One of his themes.
Yeah, come on. This family show.
But he said something. He was being asked clearly about Tucker Carlson's criticism of him, which has been very, very public, about moving forward against Iran. And Tucker or someone, you know, whether it was Tucker specifically or other people, you know, were saying this cuts against America First, which is what you ran on. Trump said, you know, considering that, you know, I ran on America First and no one used the term till I came along, which is not true. And, you know, underscores that I'm not sure he actually knows the history of that term, but I get to decide what it means. And it was pretty interesting. Basically, he was saying America First, and this is what he believes, that, you know, America First and his movement
is whatever he says
is what he feels like, and that there doesn't have to have, you know, ideological,
it's Trump first,
or intellectual cohesion. And so,
yeah.
Oh, so none.
Listen, but you,
but I'm going to get back to the hackery here just quickly.
Let me just play this for you, Murphy.
Okay, play that, and then I'll explain why Trump is going to get a win.
This is Lindsey Graham. Yeah, I want to hear that because you don't often say that. This is Lindsey Graham, who represents really what I think is probably at this point a minority wing of the Republican Party. And he had a much different cut than Tucker and Bannon. Let's listen to that.
Be all in, President Trump, in helping Israel eliminate the nuclear threat. If we need to provide bombs to Israel, provide bombs. If we need to fly planes with Israel, do joint operations. But here's the bigger question. Wouldn't the world be better off if the Ayatollahs went away and replaced by something better? Wouldn't Iran be better off?
Well, hell, South Carolina would be better off with a real conservative. It's so hypothetical. You know, so you get an Iranian civil war. That can go good or that can go bad. Here's why I think Trump may well stumble into a win here. You know, all the security people of the Western Europeans, they all get in a room and, oh, what are we going to do about the Iranians? They're closer to a bomb. Well, they can't make it small enough to put on one of their crappy rockets. We're deter them. And that's been the debate for 10 years. Well, now they got the uranium in that mountain close to a bomb. So Bibi, impetuous Bibi, for his own reasons we talked about, goes in and turns loose his Israeli Air Force. Now, there's no real Iranian air defense. So the Israelis can come over and blow up the TV station, whatever they want. The Iranians are in a weak position, but that leadership has always been pragmatic, which is why they're ready to negotiate. Because it's either that or keep getting pounded and get cornered into escalating, which means next thing you know, there's an American B-2 with a bunker buster and they lose the whole game. So I think Trump will get a ceasefire, because the Iranians are back and ready to negotiate. He'll get negotiations. And the only hope the Iranians have, which is pretty good hope, is that Trump cares about optics, not smart negotiation. And they might be able to buy some time, but enough that both Trump and Bibi can declare victory. And they have slowed down the nuclear program.
I mean, I think Mike is correct on how Trump is reading the politics of this and what it will end up playing like, certainly in the short term. But there are always unintended consequences. It just depends. If, let's say, that Trump authorizes greater use of force, is your calculation still the same, Mike?
No. Then if you escalate, you got to escalate to a win, which right. means you bomb Natanz. Then you get radioactive leaks,
no,
and you could have
Natanz.
An Iranian.
What about Fordo? What about
right? Fordo in particular. That's the bunker buster, right? I flipped it in my addled brain. But bottom line is, escalation means you own a lot. Ceasefire yes. means optic victory, and you're in a point where either you or the Israelis or even the Europeans, anybody can make an airborne house call now. So the Iranian regime is going to negotiate out of some desperation. It gives you room to score victories with less risk.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that's his objective. The one element that you omit from your analysis is Bibi himself. Now, Trump can overrule him, but, you know, he just overran Trump and jumped out ahead of him on this. You know, Trump, I think, in the aftermath, tried to suggest that this invasion was you know, part of a clever strategy to force the Iranians to negotiate. I think he made chicken salad out of, whatever. But
the American president, going back to Nixon, always has a pair of quiet tongs with the Israelis, which is munition resupply. So, you know, there is a leash.
That takes some guts, too, for Trump.
To do it publicly, yeah. No, yeah. I think all the Pauls can have a Paul win here, or they could destroy the nuclear facilities and have a big Iranian civil war to worry about. And you can be an optimist like Lindsey Graham, but those things have shaky outcomes.
I don't know. I mean, Lindsey Graham was being Lindsey Graham as Lindsey Graham has always been. I'm sure that if Trump takes another route, he'll find a way back.
Yeah. He can slide under a closed door if needed.
Okay, let's take a break right here for a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back.
Scaling your business requires the right expertise at the right time. With Upwork, you can find specialized freelancers in marketing, development, design, and more, experts who are ready to help you take your business to the next level. And you know what? I've used Upwork, David, and it works great. I've used it for logo design, got a great affordable expert who is quick and really talented. I couldn't be happier.
I'm not surprised about that because Upwork has more than two decades of experience with a simple and ambitious goal to pioneer a better way of working. Companies at every stage turn to Upwork, including Mike Murphy, to get things done, and Mike knows talent, and find more flexibility in the way they staff key projects and initiatives by accessing a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web development, AI design, and admin support, marketing, and more. So I guess, Mike, they just recruit great talent from around the world on a kind of freelance basis and hook you up with them.
Yeah, and posting a job on Upwork is so easy. There's no cost to join. You can register. Then you get to browse freelance profiles, take a look at their work. You can even get help drafting a job post, or you can book a consultation. They have a lot of support functions. It's web-based. Then it's up to you. You connect with freelancers to get the project, get you, and you can easily hire. And, you know, I think I probably use 3 or 4 freelancers now on Upwork. It really works pretty well, and it helps you take your business to the next level. Upwork makes the entire process easier, simpler, and more affordable, with quite low fees.
So post a job today and hire tomorrow with Upwork. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow.
That's Upwork, UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
Maggie, the president was up in Canada yesterday, not to assess the real estate for future acquisition, but for a G7
meeting. He was scouting for the invasion. Come on, carefully, you know, dissemble the rhetoric. We know he hates Canada.
I noticed the Canadians were keeping a close eye on him.
I would.
He did leave early. So.
He did. He got the information he needed.
Yeah. No, that was hilarious. You know, he got bored because he thinks he ought to be given orders, you know, and they all hate him. Eye rolls, so he left.
One of the things that was interesting was that his first gambit up there was not to talk about trade or some of the issues between our country and Canada. He was standing there with the Canadian prime minister, but to talk about his pal Vladimir Putin, who he apparently speaks to on a regular basis these days.
Putin speaks to me. He doesn't speak to anybody else. He doesn't want to talk because he was very insulted when he got thrown out of the G8, as I would be, as you would be, as anybody would be. He was very insulted. And, I mean, he was thrown out by Trudeau, who convinced one or two people, along with Obama. He was thrown out, and he's not a happy person about it, I can tell you that.
Well, you know, he needs a sucker, and he's got one in Trump, so why bother with the others? Why talk to him?
Maggie, he ran out before he had. Zelensky flew to Canada to meet with him. He left before meeting with Zelensky. He's speaking to Putin on a regular basis. Like, how are we to interpret all of this?
Look, coming home early means that he didn't have to meet with Zelensky.
Sheinbaum, too, but.
He has a decent relationship with Sheinbaum. Better anyway. He did have a fine meeting with Zelensky. There was a 7-minute bilat in the middle of, I think, St. Peter's, during the papal funeral. But obviously the Oval Office meeting was unlike anything I've ever seen. He doesn't like Zelensky. We know he doesn't like Zelensky. He associates Zelensky with his first impeachment, Trump's first impeachment. He, for reasons that has been the focus of lots of speculation for a long time, has always had an interest in an open channel with Putin. What I think it partly is he is concerned about, let me rephrase that. Sorry, concern is the wrong word. He publicly said he thought that Putin was tapping him along. And in terms of the negotiations, and I think it's become clear to him that he can't really have that much of an effect on Ukraine and Russia, at least on the parameters that he's willing to deal in. And so I think in his mind, better to just not engage. Now, he does not view it through the same prism that President Biden did. He is not interested in the post-World War II international order. He has made that very clear. He isn't particularly interested in terms of NATO's existing structure, and he, or at least in terms of, you know, the idea that there is a moral imperative to stay involved. And I think that he sees Iran and Israel as a scenario where he can have most impact.
Yeah, but so what happens? Does the U.S. continue to supply Ukraine, or does he just sort of let it wither and have?
Don't think we know, and I think there is such limited utility in a prediction right now. I don't, not that I try to be in the prediction game anyway, and that kind of thing. But look, the weapons that the U.S. was supplying to Ukraine was a leverage against Putin, right? Because otherwise, what interest does Putin have at all? So I could see there being a continued supplying of assistance of some kind. I also have never believed that Lindsey Graham was moving ahead with that measure against Russia.
Yeah, I mean, there's 83 sponsors or something in the Senate.
If Trump was adamantly opposed to it, I just given their relationship.
Well, it hasn't moved. That tells you something.
That's true. But I think that Trump, as we have seen, is very.
You're saying Lindsey did it to provide leverage for Trump.
Yeah, or at least with Trump's tacit okay, possibly. I mean, I just I don't. Trump tends to leave multiple pathways open and then decides which one to pick.
Murphy, you're never one who's fearful to tread into prediction land. How's this story end? Because it was amazing to hear him defend. I mean, there is a logic, I guess, if you can't talk to them if they're not here. But it was kind of amazing. I mean, the reason he got kicked out wasn't because he was using the wrong fork at, the dinner at the G8. It was because he invaded Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, look, Putin is not, it's not complicated here. The Russians, since Molotov, have negotiated by fighting over what we have for lunch while the tanks try to get a mile every day. You know, so what's going to happen? Trump's going to sell out the Ukraine as much as he can get away with. And if the Russians start winning, which you can argue they're now doing, the Europeans are going to have to step up in a huge way because Trump's not going to. The only thing that will happen, I think that I'm with Maggie. It's very hard to predict exactly what will happen, but Trump would rather have a deal with Putin than a free Ukraine. And the Europeans are on the other side of that. And the U.S. Senate, the Republican caucus, is mostly on the other side of that. So the question is how much, if the Ukrainians start to really lose, how much the Republican Senate will buck on Trump. But, Trump will get away with what he can. He's as transactional as Putin is.
Well, I think they share a worldview.
One other point that I want to add to that point that Murphy just said about the Senate, I think that public sentiment, and it's not just among Republicans. One area where I think that President Biden did not help himself, he did not effectively articulate a case to the public about why it was in the U.S. interest to continue to try to bolster Ukraine. He just kept saying this is the right thing to do without explaining why the public should want that. And that created a vacuum where over time people couldn't understand, and I think with reason, what the long-term strategy was for the U.S. here either. And
right. Well, he had a very 20th century view in which people would intuitively understand.
They should just know, exactly. And so, and in the post-Iraq war era, that's just not going to be the case. And so you did see public support eroding over time for supporting Ukraine. And now you have a situation. It isn't just that the Republican senators are, you know, aligning with Trump, although certainly I think if Trump thought this was a priority, then you would see it something different. But he doesn't. And this is what he thinks. And he got elected and he was very clear what he thinks with the public. I think that you are seeing a Republican Senate that is going to be far more concerned about an enrichment deal with Iran that doesn't go far enough, is where the Republican senators believe it should be, then they're going to care about Ukraine. That's all.
We'll be right back with Hacks on Tap.
So, Mike, this won't shock you, but I'm not big on trends. But this will shock you. I'm kind of big on clothes that feel good and last. Yeah, yeah. That's why I keep going back to Quince. Their lightweight layers and high-quality staples have become, well, my everyday essentials.
Well, you know, yeah, the last trend you got behind was in 1917, but I digress.
I'm going to put my spat right in your butt. Okay, go ahead.
Quince has all the things you actually want to wear this summer, like organic cotton silk polos,
yeah,
European linen beach shorts. Ooh, we're talking your recipe, David. And comfortable pants that work for everything from backyard hangs to nice dinners. So I'm going to need a pair of those. The best part, everything with Quince is half the cost of similar brands. By working directly with top artisans and cutting out those middlemen, Quince gives you luxury pieces without the big markups. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes.
You know, Mike, my daughter-in-law swears by Quince's sweaters. And this holiday season, we went for a Quince Kids rolling suitcase for my grandson. And let me tell you, he really loved it. I mean, it's a cute little thing, stylish, practical, and a hit with a little guy who takes it everywhere. They're coming to visit soon, and he will have his little Quince suitcase with him.
Oh, it's hard to argue with that. Who needs market research, you know? If a kid loves it, you know it's a good product.
Yeah, so stick to the staples that last with elevated essentials from Quince. Go to quince.com/hacks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's Quince, Quince, quince.com/hacks to get free shipping and that incredible 365-day returns policy.
Quince.com/hacks.
All right, time for a pivot, I think, because I'm looking at the clock here, and we got a lot of stuff, and particularly I want to get into this New York mayor's race, because I've thought for about a week, speaking of predictions, that Mondami's going to win, even with the mighty New York Times endorsing against him, which normally means something.
They
said don't do anything.
They recommended against him.
That was a hot mess, that editorial.
Okay, separate section of the paper. You guys talking
about? Yes, no.
I never met him.
That was basically a way of a paper that called for Andrew Cuomo to resign as governor to endorse him.
Yeah, they were locked in. It was a tough situation for them.
For mayor without having actually saying the words, but that's what it was. All right, let's talk about this now. I there are a couple of things nationally, Mike, if you want to do it that in that order. I did want to talk about this immigration stuff. And
well, let's do that because I'm on the front lines here. I can report from L.A. What's really going on, a little street journalism. Then we'll do the mayor's race.
I mean, this is life in the era of Trump, because there were huge stories last week about, you know, Marines in Los Angeles with you know, their eyes peeled on Mike Murphy and others. And there was...
I'm an expert at burning Waymos, by the way. Just, you know, find me on the dark web. I'll tell you all about it.
I thought I
saw... It was a punchline here, but go ahead.
Yeah, but... and then there was this thing that I think is probably as relevant to this discussion, which is Trump signaling that he was going to go easier on farmers and on restaurateurs and others who actually rely on immigrants and who were really kicking up a bunch of dust because these raids were affecting their businesses. And he suggested very publicly that there would be some relief. And then by Sunday, he was sending out, you know, fire-breathing denials of all of that and retrenching, and now we're back to where we were. There's no... It's like Stephen Miller got a hold of his cell phone and recast the whole thing.
Well, that's a Maggie question there, because you never quite know who's in his ear.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I do... Look, I think that we... we've seen a lot of ways in which Trump is different than term one, just that he's more willing to do things that I think he always wanted to do, that he's obviously quite focused on retribution, that there are
parades and stuff.
Right. There are some stuff. There are some, well, yes, actually, it was something.
Right.
There are some things that he wanted to do that he knew what he wanted to do, and he was going to do them if he won. But there's a lot of issues on which he just doesn't have as firm a grasp as people, some of his supporters or his advisors would like to say he does, or an interest. And immigration, he has never been as despite the rhetoric, he has actually never been as deeply interested in what conducting the largest mass deportation effort in history, in the U.S. history, would mean as, say, Stephen Miller. So, you know, Brooke Rollins, the ag secretary, got in his ear about farmers. Hotel workers is obviously an issue near and dear to Trump's heart. And then you saw Stephen Miller kind of rebounding. But where the policy actually is, I don't think we know yet, because we've heard all of these conflicting things about, A, what they were even doing in the first place at ICE in terms of, you know, workplace raids at farms and so forth. And B, I'm not clear whether that has actually been a shift, or I know there was a report about it, but I don't quite know what it means in practicality. What it does mean is that Trump is clearly responsive to certain levers of pressure still. And what that looks like for the future remains to be seen. There were some business folks I saw on X, formerly known as Twitter, taking something of a victory lap for getting Trump to change his opinion. And, you know,
have they taken their posts down?
Right. Well, it just reminds me of like when Schumer and Pelosi had that meeting with Trump in term one about DACA, and they rushed to the sticks outside of the microphones outside of the West Wing.
I love when you talk journalism terms like
thank you
that,
to try to solidify it. And then he changed off that too. It just doesn't, you know, some of the there are some familiar notes being hit here, but I don't know what it means in terms of the long term. In terms of what Murphy was saying about LA, you know, a couple of things. The visuals were absolutely what Trump
they wanted. Yeah.
I mean, this was
they wanted Murphy burning Waymos.
Right.
Well, you know, that was the dichotomy, though, because I think it worked for Trump. Disorder always does, because then, well, we better get stormtroopers and countries out of control. Out here, it was a big yawn. People were irate, even the local cops and that infrastructure. They don't want ICE here. They don't want feds bigfooting them. But L.A. County is so big, 10 million people, bigger than most states. It was one square mile. We get more trouble after a Grammy after party. So, you know, we were all getting calls from the relatives back in Minnesota. Are you guys okay? Oh, we're fine. You know, there was criticism of Bass because on night one, the cops let those kids kind of run wild, you know, and then on night two, she cracked down a bit, a day late. But it was hardly... There's just a general feeling in this Latino community,
right?
Because everybody has a second grade teacher or a friend or their doctor who's got a cousin who got scooped off the street or is hiding, worried. I mean, there was a panic.
What you just said is, I think, a key point, Mike, which is that even more than New York City, where there is a very vibrant immigrant community, a Latino immigrant community, immigration is even more so part of the fabric of daily life in LA. And,
oh, completely. Here, 1/3 of our population are immigrants.
Right, and I think that sense of fear and terror that Trump wanted to create, you know, in part so that people will leave the country on their own, or just so that other people will be afraid, is what you're talking about. And two things can be true at once. The White House can be very happy with images that it has, and it can be true that Trump said he was going to do all of this and is going ahead and doing it. And there is still a large number of people in this country who don't share the view of that policy and are.
Look, I'm one of them. And I can tell you,
I'm not educating
here.
I wish you would.
No, I get it. Hopeless.
It is creating a real trauma in the community. And an actual, you know, both in terms of fear and then for a number of families in terms of actuality.
Yeah. To Maggie's point, Trump is a television producer. He want the images on TV are what's important to him. He used LA to stage his reality show, regardless of what the reality really was. And now they're signaling that they're going to do the same in Chicago and New York and other.
Well,
you know,
and it's also like, I mean, I guess I would say that, you know, it's related to this. My colleagues, Luke Broadwater and Jonathan Swanstop, haven't slept much. They traveled.
Try narrow water. Maybe that's easier
to
say.
Okay. Yeah. They traveled with Trump to the Mideast.
I have to listen to this every week. Go ahead.
Well, let's make sure it goes longer, this particular part. They were covering Trump's Mideast trip for the Times, and they did a great story about how, you know, while Trump is sort of cracking down on dissent and anybody who questions him and his perceived enemies and anyone who's crossed him at home, you know, he was allegedly Iranians were allegedly the ones who hacked his campaign. I mean, they've denied this and whatever, but and there was a murder for hire plot that the feds uncovered, and Trump is talking about deal making and schmoozing, and you know, I think there is some tightening of the screws at home while he is struggling with global conflicts.
You're saying there were screws loose?
Moving on.
Okay. Yeah, please. We're getting letters already.
I got two things I want to ask you guys. One is, what do you think the impact of the parade / protests were? Do the protests, you know, we had big protests the day after Trump got inaugurated in 2017, and that sort of foreshadowed what we saw in the midterms. In terms of, you know, an active Democratic base, do we think that there's meaning to these protests?
Yeah, well, everything has meaning, and Trump's in decline. The Republicans, they're going to have a rough midterm, and so that energy is out there. I think the protests, because they're theatrical, are a little overrated, but they're a symptom. They're part
just
of a vast constellation
of things.
Yeah, no, it's something. It's something. But I don't think it's a cause. I think it's a byproduct of Trump in a slide between economic stuff, which we always pay too little attention to, but which is the voter driver, and everything else Trump's doing in office, which is polarizing, and you know his numbers are going down.
I don't know how much his numbers are going down. Everybody keeps saying
that. They're pretty stable, actually. They're going down slightly, but they're stable.
Yeah, that's the direction is what counts.
Murphy's been saying this for 3 years, so
right. I was going to say, though, I mean, like, I keep reading, like, Trump is panicking, he knows he's weak, and, like, I don't actually think that's what's happening at all, but, like, now, it doesn't mean that the Republicans won't have a difficult midterm. The sign that they know that is the fact that there's this effort to try to change the district lines in Texas. I mean, like, mm-hmm. That is a clear sign that they know they have a problem. But in terms of the protests as a, you know, as symptoms, I feel compelled to stress this because I feel compelled to say this because Trump didn't differentiate between the peaceful protests and the right to peacefully protest and those that delve into, you know, unrest. But protest is a basic right in this country. And so people are exercising their right because they want to show that they can. And I think that is part of why you saw these protests. Mm-hmm. I think they are genuinely upset about Some people, not everybody, but I think some people are genuinely upset about what they're seeing and want to find a way to demonstrate that. I don't think we should say, and I think we all know this because we're all pretty ancient to varying degrees.
Us more than you, but go ahead.
Yeah, Axe in particular. Go ahead.
Yes.
If you insist.
Speak up. I can't hear you.
Right. We all know that declaring in June of the off year. What this is going to look like next year, I have no idea. Yeah. I have no idea what.
Well, partly it's, you know, part of it has to do with how deep Trump is willing to go.
Correct. But I do, and I think that Mike's point about the economy is extremely well taken, but that too is not yet showing up either. The tariffs impact is not yet clear. Inflation is not quite what people were predicting it might be. Now, maybe it'll get there, but it isn't. And how much people are willing to give him a pass?
Well, it's only been 4 months. You know, it seems like
I understand.
So I think it's not unreasonable for people to say, well, he hasn't had time to really. But we know that people aren't happy about the same things they weren't happy about when Biden was here.
He's coming close to Biden numbers on the economy now, God forbid, because of inventory. Tariffs are a delayed impact. Wait till July 4th. Go down to your local friendly Chevy dealer and see what the world looks like on July 15th.
Right. I'm not disagreeing with you that, like, I mean, this could get, you know, he had a series of posts a couple of weeks ago where on Truth Social where he kept saying, like, prices are down, you know, 87% or something like that. And it was actually interesting. It was the first time that I had ever seen people in his replies, which are usually pretty, you know, thank you, President Trump. They were like, not where I live. And so, you know, that is, we'll see where it goes.
To be fair, if in fact, in 6 months or a year from now, people feel like costs are down and they're more prosperous, he will benefit from that. But here's the reality of Donald Trump. He is the greatest salesman, maybe the greatest salesman and brander, self-brander in American history. I mean, he's up there with the really, really titanic figures. But the thing about sales is eventually you have to deliver something. And if he doesn't deliver, I think that he's got Murphy's prediction will be true. And so we'll see about that.
Well, what makes it true is it's a Murphy prediction. But
yeah, no, I'm not saying Murphy's going wrong. I'm just saying we don't.
But here's the thing. I think we're totally missing the boat here. We're talking about it like he's got a reelect to run. You know, he's on a shot clock.
I'm just talking about 26.
Oh, 26. Well, I'm willing to bet money on 26.
Well, no, but what he does have is he has a party that has been reshaped around his image primarily or mostly. And there will be a primary in 2028, and one of the people I assume will be in that primary will be
Vance.
And so, so that is part of why I'm thinking that way.
I mean, I bet you a lot of people are listening to this podcast saying, "Well, what exactly will our democracy look like in 2026 and 2028 as well?" And you know, so part of the importance of, I guess, people being out there protesting was expressing a sentiment that the shit's important. You know, this is
it is. I remain an optimist about that, but we will see. Who knows?
I am as well, in part because I think the courts are playing the role that they're supposed to play here. But you know, listen, it's these are challenges that we've not seen before.
Now let's hear from our sponsors.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
We're ditching the mailbag this week because we have Maggie here. So we've got a little bit more time to explore these questions. This decision was made while you were talking, Mike. So
yeah, me talking, rare this one, but go ahead.
But anyway, but here's my question. In the last week, we had the events in Los Angeles, which were stunning. We've never seen Marines land in an American city in that way. You know, the National Guard, the first time in 60 years, the president has taken over the National Guard and directed them without cooperation of the governor.
Yeah, without the governor's request.
Yeah. I mean, it was so, and we saw what we saw there, as limited as you point out, Mike, as it was to national television.
No, it was a TV show for Fox.
We've watched, you know, this Middle East thing blow up. We've watched, you know, the Ukraine thing continue. On the weekend, we saw two American politicians shot, one assassinated in the state of Minnesota. We saw a military parade, something of the likes we've not seen before, although it was not as bad apparently as some had feared, but still, we saw these protests. And my question is this. People voted for Joe Biden because they thought the world was out of control and he wasn't in command. At what point, is there a point at which people say, you know what? This is a little looser than I thought it was going to be. Things are a little more chaotic than I mean, that affected him in 2020. Do people become, at some point, disenchanted with high anxiety?
Yes. It started. It just needs time. As you said, 4 months in, just triple this. See where we are next March.
One thing that I think we lose sight of is that Trump inherited, and you know, you'll fill in this after I say it. I know where it'll go, but it's the truth. Trump inherited a pretty calm world, right? In 2017. You know, the Russia interference in the election aside, according to the IC, you know, there were and the Russian incursion into Crimea a few years earlier, but we did not have what is happening now. Now, Trump had argued during the campaign that this all happened because Biden was weak and I will be able to bring things to a close. And, you know, that his mere presence was going to be what suddenly brought peace, and that everybody would be so afraid. And that was always his argument in term one, was the madman theory, that people were too afraid of what he might be willing to do.
Well, he's worked that well.
Well, but it's not, it isn't having the desired effect now. And so do I think that people, if I'm understanding what you're asking me correctly, do I think that people will realize that we're, you know, 4 months in and there's lots of fires going around? Like, yes, I do. And I think that if the U.S. gets more involved in a Middle East conflict, you know, knowing that Donald Trump, part of why he won was he openly said in 2016 that he, and 2015, that he thought the Iraq war was bad. And that was something that a lot of Republicans had wanted their candidates to say at that point, you know, well post Tea Party coming onto the scene. If on his watch there is now real U.S. involvement in a Mideast engagement, I think that is going to have a significant effect. To what end? I don't know. I mean, I come back to what Murphy said before, which is that everybody's personal pocketbook is what they look at most.
Yes, and that's absolutely, you know,
but do I think that? I think that the general public feels very tired and weary. And I think what was striking about the protests was that it was the first time we've really seen anything like that in this term, which has not been a term in which a lot of Trump's critics have felt very sanguine about what he's doing. But I don't know. I don't know where it heads. I wish I had a great answer. Part of the issue here and part of why I'm hesitating on this is the information ecosystem is so fractured now.
Yes.
People are getting what information people actually are getting is always an open question. A lot of them are getting it from TikTok. People are getting it from partisan news sites. I think that mass events don't break. The stunning thing about the Signalgate story that you referenced earlier about Mike Waltz was that one really broke through. Most things don't break through now. So mm-hmm. what people are actually experiencing.
Yes, you live in your own infrastructure, correct. your own ecosystem.
Right. So are people really aware that, you know, Ukraine and Russia is still raging? Probably not in their daily lives. But if the U.S. is suddenly involved in the Mideast, I think they will understand that.
Just a word, Mike, about these legislators in Minnesota. You know, we can just sort of become casual about these things and, you know, political violence becoming more common, but it is concerning. I mean, and it's not surprising, you know, when we live in an environment in which I disagree with you and therefore you are a dangerous radical who wants to destroy the country.
Well, nobody's an opponent. Yeah, everybody's, I'm right, you're evil, so you must be destroyed.
That's right.
It's a cancer on our politics, and it is deeply in the system now, and also we're a place where it's easy to get the appliance of death, which is something the population wants, by the way.
That's right.
So there we are. Yeah, no, it's horrible. It's completely the ugliness of it. The truth is, I don't even follow the news the way I used to.
Is that true, Mike?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Why? It's just watching our horrible pop culture infect our politics with a orange idiot who's trying to blow up the Atlantic Alliance and everything else that's counted for 80 years. No, I have to make myself pay attention to this, as show being one of the reasons.
You should follow it, Mike, because I just read this morning that Murphy Industries has gone bankrupt. So you better check in on the
stock scam a year ago, David. Come on, catch up.
Then you see boneheads like Mike Lee, the senator from Utah.
He's the worst, you know. He's the worst.
Making light of this and saying that this was all Marxists, you know, who didn't get their way, who were acting out and so on. And it's like, take a step back, brother, and look around and understand. And I say this to everyone, you know. There's all kinds of chatter around the Trump assassination attempts and on both sides, you know, J.D. Vance was, you remember Maggie jumping in very early and sort of blaming it on the left. And
I do.
Take a step back. You know, this is a real, you talk about things that threaten democracy. If people have to fear serving their communities.
That's right.
That is a real, real risk. And, you know, one thing I hope they'll reevaluate, but I'm not sure they will, is that, the new FBI director has said they're going to de-emphasize domestic terrorism investigations. I think this would now not be the time for that.
Well, can I also just add one thing, which is timely, given that we're talking about this, and I don't want to let this moment pass. President Trump himself was the victim of two assassination attempts, one more significant, that a bullet came very close to his head, or struck his ear, and what happened in Butler was terrible, and everybody who was there is still very impacted by it. He was asked on the plane back from the G7 overnight by the reporters traveling with him. One of the reporters asked about whether he had called Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota after the assassinations there. And the president said, and I'm just quoting from the Pool Report, "I don't really call him. I think the governor of Minnesota is so whacked out, I'm not calling him. Why would I call him? I could call him, say, hi, how are you doing? The guy doesn't have a clue. He's a mess. So I could be nice and call him, but why waste time?" And there is an obligation of people in leadership to...
Well, particularly the president of the United States.
Are we shocked? I'm not. I mean, we keep. It's not like we're discovering what Trump is. Trump is what he's been. He's awful.
Yeah, but in this moment,
of course. But I'm not surprised.
Can you imagine any other president? President taking that posture?
No, but I mean, this is what he is.
He is much more candid about. He is much more clear about that kind of thing, or that America First is whatever he thinks it is, and so forth. Frankly, than he has been at any other point. But it was a pretty remarkable statement nonetheless.
Let's just finish this by saying our thoughts are with the Hortman family, with Senator Hoffman and his wife, who are recovering from this attack, of people of Minnesota who knew and loved them. Our producer, Hannah McDonald, is someone who knew her and was very moved by and saddened and by the loss. Everybody who did seem to like her, and she reflects so many other people who have spoken so glowingly, and it's just such a tragedy. So but Murphy, when can we talk about the New York mayor's race? You keep trying to stop me.
Next week we're 1 hour in.
That's my fault,
but go ahead.
Well, no, it's interesting. You've got this kind of charismatic young change candidate of optics, but, you know, makes de Blasio look like Goldwater, and Mondami, and he is shooting up in the polls, very savvy campaign. The two regulars, one Lander has not caught city controller any fire. So they're stuck with Cuomo, who walks around with a ton of baggage. And my theory was ranked choice would put a ceiling on Mondami. He's not a big Israel supporter, some of the traditional kind of things that are part of the coalition to win a New York mayor's race. But the polling indicates no. There's so much antipathy to Cuomo and lack of interest in the others. There are a bunch of kind of midget candidates running around who don't have a lot of support, though I thought Lander had a shot. I think there's a real chance, probably a majority chance, that this guy Mondami will win. And that'll be a bit of an earthquake.
Maggie, you lived there and you covered New York for years. I mean, one thing that's changed, Mike may be working a little bit off of a dated playbook of what the New York primary electorate looks like.
Well, I don't know. I don't think we know yet. I mean, I think we are still discovering what Mike was just describing about, you know, the belief that Mondani would be capped is certainly what Cuomo world.
Yes.
Believed, you know, but Cuomo world also knew that Cuomo would be capped, right?
Right, exactly.
And choice voting because his unfaves are so.
Well, because of this, let me interrupt you for a second. Let's just play Mondami in a debate with Cuomo and the other candidates on Cuomo.
To Mr. Cuomo, I have never had to resign in disgrace. I have never cut Medicaid. I have never stolen hundreds of millions of dollars from the MTA. I have never hounded the 13 women who credibly accused me of sexual harassment. I have never sued for their gynecological records. And I have never done those things because I am not you, Mr. Cuomo. And furthermore, the name is Mamdani. Mamdani. You should learn how to say it because we got to get it right.
This was after Cuomo not only mispronounced his name, but also denigrated his experience, which is admittedly relatively limited. He's 33 years old, two terms in the assembly.
Do we have the Cuomo sound? It might be fun to get fire.
Let's listen to what Andrew Cuomo had to say about Mamdani.
The disillusioned are not who he's talking to. These are the disillusioned, right? These are the people. It's the hard-working middle-class people.
He's skyrocketing in the polls.
But two different things. First, the what I call the disillusioned Democrats who didn't come out and stayed home, and some may have voted for Trump. Those are middle-class working families, middle-aged middle-class, let's call them that. And they feel let down by the Democratic Party.
So who's winning that contest? You listen to the two of them. And that's the whole campaign. It's not really about policy. It's about style and baggage. And the fresh new guy with the new interesting baggage is clearly clobbering the old boring pedantic guy with the well well-aged and polished baggage. Now, Cuomo can still win.
I don't think that's totally true, Mike, that it's not about policy. I think that Mondani in particular have pretty big, deep distinctions on what policing should look like.
No, no, no. I agree on all that. Policy is part of it, but isn't the contrast more style? Do you think Mondani's really being examined on the policy stuff? Because that's where most of the...
No, I don't. I think Mondani...
The critics, that's my point. I think he's getting a pass based on style.
You and I met, you were just a teenager at the time when you were covering the 2001 mayoral race in New York.
Thank you, yep.
Yes. What's striking to me when I hear Mamdani talk about issues is some of them are really familiar to me about the affordability of housing in New York and about policing and about some of those issues. It sounds very much like the 2001 race. There's always been these two New Yorks, you know, the prosperous, highly educated New York, and then, and then the large population of Hispanics, African Americans, left liberals, and so on. He is assembling that. But Cuomo is appealing to another group of New Yorkers, which is outer borough, middle class voters who are concerned about crime, who are concerned about issues that motivate a more conservative voters. And the question is that enough for him?
I don't think we know. I mean, I think that it's interesting as you were talking about two New Yorks, I was thinking that would be a really interesting message for a candidate. Oh,
yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I have never had less of a sense that a mayor's race is going on, first of all, even in 2021, right after the pandemic, it was more vibrant and alive than what is happening right now, save for a very large Mondani rally the other day with AOC. There has been very little mail that has been going out, at least in our house, by the candidates. And so I don't have a sense of whether a younger electorate will turn out this time or whether it's going to be the same electorate that we have generally seen. Mm-hmm. The bet from Cuomo world is that it's the latter. But
right.
We're going to find out in a couple.
Yeah.
We won't find out in a few weeks, but we'll find out after that.
Yeah. Everything is in motion in politics, you know, and if you have momentum going into an election, that momentum tends to carry through. Now, whether Cuomo has enough of a cushion, I would still say he's slightly the favorite in this race. I don't think he's going to be a lot of people's second choice. This ranked choice thing throws a kick into it. So I don't know what's going to happen.
Let's bet a dollar. Let's bet a dollar. I'll take Mon with an N, Dami. You take Cuomo. $1.
I'm not making a bet because I don't know. I'm saying I do not know. Go ahead, Maggie.
Can I make one prediction before or if you're not going to make it, I guess.
Yeah.
But Cuomo has not exactly lit up the world with his campaigning.
As reflected in that clip we heard. Yeah.
Yep. You could hear that in the bite. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think that if Cuomo doesn't win, not working for it will be part of why.
Oh, I agree. You know, but his vibe, what's more fun, punishing that guy or risking Mondami? I think punishing Cuomo's going to be more fun.
Well, you know, there's going to be a second round in November. Cuomo's mm-hmm. going to be on the ballot again. Adams is going to be on the ballot again. There's a Republican candidate on the ballot again. So the fun continues.
If Cuomo wins the primary, then I don't think November's much of a race.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree. That's probably true.
But if he doesn't, then I agree with you. And I think the story of the Democratic
Party. Donnie will be on the ballot in November too, in some form or fashion. I predict if he doesn't win the nomination.
But if he wins the nomination, a plurality might be better for him. I don't know.
I also think that what it means for the Democratic Party going forward.
Yeah.
Is a huge question, but anyway.
Yeah, big national spotlight.
He would become a big target for Trump,
Instant.
And he will be also someone who Democrats will look at and and see what he has. Yep. No, it's all very, very interesting.
Just in time for next year's congressionals. Have a left-wing, loony left guy running the city of
New
York.
If we go a little while longer, we will be at next year's congressional. So we got to go.
Tell me about it. All right. If you have a question for the hack, save it for next week.
Right.
We're not. We burned up our time.
Sorry,
you know,
folks.
The email.
No.
Send us a voicemail. Send us a whatever. Okay, Maggie, thank you. Back behind the eyebrow. You've got to go figure out the lunatics.
Yeah, Godspeed there. My friend. We'll see you soon.
We'll see you next week. See you.
Thank you.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.